Government Run Amok. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to the Saturday edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today, as usual, is my co-host, our Vice Chairman, fellow analyst, and my good friend, Chuck Michaels.
And it's good to be with you again, Barry, and it's good to be with the folks out there that are listening.
It is. And folks, for those of you who were listening to our program yesterday, I did a little tease about this program today. But what we're going to talk about today isn't a laughing matter, and it's not a, and there's no tease about it. I honestly wish that this was some kind of an early April Fool's joke, or just a y'all just kidding, you know, wink wink, nudge nudge at the end. But that's not what's been happening. As you, if you've listened to this program over the months that we've been on, you know we've talked about a lot of issues, some fun, some lighthearted, some very serious, but. Honestly, Chuck, I can't think of any other issue that we've dealt with or need to deal with that the implications of which are more serious to our liberties and to our continued existence as a free nation than this particular issue.
I would say this is a pivotal issue. If nothing is done, and the only way it's going to get done is if we apply pressure to our elected representatives, and I like the old, I think it was Senator Everett Dirksen who said, when we feel the heat, we see the light. Well, it's time that we apply a little heat on this, because what is going on is it used to be slow, and now it's become very rapid undermining of our constitutional liberties. And when I say our constitutional liberties, all the Constitution does is guarantee our liberties. It doesn't give them to us. And that is an important point that almost no one really grasps. You have liberties because you are a human being, and you have rights because you are a human being. You don't have them because the Constitution gives them to you. The Constitution is merely a guarantee. What we're seeing is right now, and what we're going to be discussing today, is the cancellation of those guarantees with a set of new guarantees that says, we're going to make you safe, even if it means we have to take you and throw you in a prison, in a dog cage, in a military base in Cuba. You will be safe. You may not be free, but you will be safe. Well, the fact is that we should always keep in mind that with liberty comes risk, and it's hopefully a reasonable risk. But the fact is, sometimes it's a little beyond reasonable risk. When people went delving into the West, they very much took their life in their own hands and depended upon God to protect them. And sometimes God had that plan for their life, and sometimes God had another plan for their life. But the fact is that had current government been sitting in the seat of power, you simply would not have been allowed to go west, just as the British said in the 1770s and 1760s and 1770s, you can't go west of the Allegheny Mountains. And Americans did it anyway. And the fact is they did it because they have a pioneering spirit, and they understood that with liberty comes risk. And we seem to have forgotten that in this country.
Yes, I believe that if we look on our organic laws of this land, especially our Declaration of Independence, it says that we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, and those are the right to life, the right to liberty, and the right to the pursuit of happiness, among others. But nowhere in there does it say the right not to have to take any risk.
That's right.
As a matter of fact, as you mentioned, liberty entails risk. So does the pursuit of happiness. We wouldn't have so many entrepreneurs who sometimes take risks and are wildly rewarded, and some of them who take risks and are wildly panned for it.
Well, listen, how many of us who own our own business haven't taken a rather wild gamble in taking out a personal loan in order to finance our businesses?
That, if you can still do that.
You can still do that, because I just did it. I mean, I borrowed a rather large sum of money. It's a line of credit, so I don't have it all out at once. But the fact is, if my business goes bust, I am personally responsible for that loan.
Yes.
And I have no intentions, if I can avoid it, if something would happen, if the economy continues to be bad or something, and I flop, I have no intentions of sticking somebody else with that debt. I intend eventually to pay that off. They may not get it in the increments they want it in, but they'll get it back. And I think far too many people in this country have also avoided that particular responsibility. In fact, responsibility is the key to liberty, because it's well understood that with liberties come responsibilities. And that is a formula that has fallen on hard times because of the idea of the quote-unquote safety net, wherein, well, don't worry, if you fail, we'll all come around and make sure you don't hit the ground. And if your neighbors aren't happy with doing that, then we'll just stick a gun in their back and force them to do it anyway.
Yeah, and that whole idea of the safety net, obviously, in the initial thought of it, the initial philosophy of it, was due to the desire to want to help people and to minister to their needs in some way. But the big problem is that the focus was all wrong, because the focus was that the government was to come in and do this, not the church. But if you look at Scripture, the church has had that role of providing for widows and orphans and meeting the needs of people and helping the hurting and the sick and the afflicted. I mean, you know, we've talked about this before. When you look around our city here and you look at the various hospitals, you see Riverside Methodist Hospital. You see Grant and Elizabeth, you know, and all of these others that are Catholic hospitals.
Mount Carmel Catholic.
Mount Carmel and all of these others that were there because the church were meeting the needs of the communities and the areas in which they served. And now we've got this whole idea of the rise of the nanny state, where it's the state's responsibility to take care of everybody. And, of course, concomitantly with that comes the idea that the state has to protect everybody and offer them complete security, except if you're an enemy of the state.
Yes.
And that's what we're getting to today, ladies and gentlemen. We've talked about before on this program, if you've been with us for any length of time, the strange and what we call unconstitutional case of the assassination of Anwar al-Awlaki. And you know, I understand that a lot of people have very passionate feelings about this because of his political sentiments, that he aligned himself with al-Qaeda, mm-hmm. who we're at war with. Are we at war with al-Qaeda? I mean, al-Qaeda is not a country. It's an organization loosely affiliated around the world. And honestly, I'm not sure we have a declared war on them.
And that sentiment is going to be made manifestly obvious in the audio that we're going to build a lot of today's show around. What we'll do is we will play this thing, and then we'll come through and we will do some critiquing of it, and we may play parts of it over again. What's really going on is that Christians are being suckered into this idea that we are in this quote-unquote war against terror, when in fact you can't fight a war against a tactic. Now, I've made that point, I don't know, 3 or 4 times, but I'm going to make it again. You cannot make war against a battle tactic. And the fact is that what we have is people who are committing acts of war without benefit of country. Now, that's nothing new in the history of the United States. In the old days, that was called piracy.
Yes.
And there are constitutional methods to be used when we get into a fight against piracy. There's a whole bunch of the Constitution that is dedicated to things like letters of marque and reprisal, which we talked about extensively when the al-Awlaki thing first came up. And we're going to go back to it. And there are also incidences where, let's say that one of those pirates is an American citizen. Does the Constitution have anything to say about that? And the answer is, absolutely it does.
Yes, it does.
Is the solution what is being offered up as the acceptable solution with all the excuses?
Well, that's what we're going to be getting at today, because, ladies and gentlemen, before you turn your radios off, we're not just rehashing the case of Anwar al-Awlaki. We're using it as the springboard to, well, I guess, Chuck, what we're doing is we're giving them another "see, we told you so" episode of Principles and Policies. Because as much as some people may have thought that that was a great thing, that we were, you know, we're getting tough on the war on terror, and we're getting tough, and, you know, you can't run and you can't hide anywhere from the might of the United States. And, you know, we hear all the country songs singing about, you know, waving the flag and dropping bombs on people and things. And again, I understand the philosophy behind right. that. But what's been happening is, and I mentioned philosophy specifically, we have now created an environment that is allowing certain philosophies from certain people in positions of authority and influence to actually, I guess, basically, as I like to say, the left always outruns their cover.
Yes.
They're finally coming out and saying what they've thought all along, Chuck, that the American people don't deserve the protections of the United States Constitution, and that because they're made of such finer stuff, as Bastiat would say about the legislator, he's made of finer stuff than you and I, that he can determine unilaterally whether or not you have any rights or at all, whether you have liberty. We've talked about the National Defense Authorization Act and the amendment that was put in there by Senator John McCain yep. and Senator Carl Levin that basically would allow the government and the military, because it did away with the Posse Comitatus Act, so you can basically deputize military to handle domestic law enforcement and send them to somebody's home at any day, hour of the day or night, sort of like what we talked about this week about the FBI chainsawing somebody's door down and getting the wrong address. But they can do it if they have a suspicion that you might be a terrorist. They can come break in, take you away, not provide you with counsel, not allow anybody to know where you're being taken or the charges against you, and hold you indefinitely. And if you think it isn't already happening, guess again, because the Obama administration has already had a number of folks, suspects, that they've been holding indefinitely without charges.
Well, the NDAA is being used. It's already in use. It was signed into law. It's already in use, and it's being used as the rationale to actually step up these kinds of things. And I actually have, I've been looking for, and I'm trying to get it in a form we can use it in on this show, but some audio where basically President Obama is talking about the use of the NDAA
yes.
as his rationale for performing certain acts having to do with detaining individuals without trial.
That's right. So we've already got that going. And now, you know, as we've talked on this program in the past few weeks, we have the Enemy Expatriation Act, where they can basically, if they determine that you've done anything that they would consider terroristic, they can take away your citizenship.
And that's, Barry, that is probably the most frightening aspect of this. There are now things that are called expatriating acts. Well, in the old days, those were not called expatriating acts. They were called acts of treason.
Treason. That's right.
And there is a constitutional method to deal with that, and it has nothing to do with dragging you out in the middle of the night and hauling you off to a prison camp in Cuba. It has to do with hauling you before a court. Actually, treason trials were done in state courts.
Yes.
Up until relatively recently. And in fact, let's say that, you know, we were Timothy McVeigh bombing the Alfred P. Murrah building, and I'd say that's an act of treason, especially since I personally think that he was probably working for as an agent of a foreign government and doing that. I don't think he did that on his own. But in any case, and we hauled him before a court in a state court in Oklahoma, and he would be tried for treason and then given the due penalty for that act.
Yes.
Under the NDAA, Timothy McVeigh could be stripped of his citizenship, hauled off, held indefinitely, never given a trial.
Never charged with anything.
Never charged with anything. Just simply disappeared.
Well, that's true. And you're right, Chuck, and that may be very egregious, but I'm going to have to trump you on this one, because there's one thing that's actually even worse than those issues, which we already are dealing with. And that is what just happened on an interview that yes. CBS News' Scott Pelley, who was a reporter, who actually is a journalist who, I'm not sure how much of a constitutionalist he is, But, you know, he's like a blind pig. It finds an acorn every once in a while. He's found an acorn because he is now, because of the Anwar al-Awlaki issue and the questions that it has brought up in the minds of many people, including the ACLU, including many constitutionalists like you and I, that there's something quite threatening and dangerous and ominous about the idea that the president can sign off and make a determination that somebody, an American citizen, is a terrorist, and then an entity like the Central Intelligence Agency can then take unmanned drone planes and then create strategic assassinations of these individuals. Now, that all happened on foreign soil, but see, Pelley has been asking the question, and if you remember in some of the Republican presidential debates, he asked that question to some of the candidates. Now, many of those that he asked who seem to say yay for our side on something like that are no longer running, although a couple of them are, and that's much more dangerous.
Yeah.
But the key is that he interviewed the Secretary of Defense, Leon Panetta, who also, just for last, in the Clinton administration, was the former head of the CIA. He interviewed Defense Secretary Leon Panetta in the Obama administration, and he asked him the same question. It's what Panetta said. It's the philosophy that is driving the Obama administration, and believe you me, when Leon Panetta is speaking about this, he's not speaking off the cuff, and he's not speaking for, this is just what Leon Panetta thinks. He's speaking as a instrument or an organ of the Obama administration when he's doing this interview. And basically what Panetta gets down to, and ladies and gentlemen, don't believe it from us, we're going to play you the audio of this interview where Panetta believes that it is absolutely valid for the president to target an American citizen and for that citizen to lose every due process right they have and can be killed on American soil.
Well, let's be clear about this. This looks like a very hard-hitting interview, which it wasn't.
No, it was not.
No, this was let's re-elect Barack so that we can get more guys like Panetta in there. But this is sort of a taking Panetta out for a little rap on the knuckles for this stand. And this shows that both left and right are deeply concerned about this very nebulous way of treating constitutional rights. Because what happens is we're redefining them out of existence. If you're ready, I'll play that audio.
I think we need to do that. I think folks, you listen carefully. Whatever you're doing, you know, if you've got stuff in the back, focus in here. If you didn't see this in 60 Minutes, where this actual interview actually took place originally, listen carefully. It's only a couple, 3 minutes. Listen carefully to the words of the Secretary of Defense of the United States, Leon Panetta, about his view and the administration's view of whether or not you have any right to live.
You killed al-Awlaki, American citizen. No trial, no due process. You just executed the death penalty. What's the legal justification for that?
Well, you know, without getting into the specifics of the operation, if someone is a citizen of the United States and is a terrorist who wants to attack our people and kill Americans, in my book, that person is a terrorist. And the reality is that under our laws, that person is a terrorist. And we're required under a process of law to be able to justify that despite the fact that this person may be a citizen, he is first and foremost a terrorist who threatens our people. And for that reason, we can establish a legal basis on which we ought to go after that individual, just as we go after bin Laden, just as we go after other terrorists. Why? Because their goal is to kill our people. And for that reason, we have to defend ourselves.
But they're not entitled to due process of law under the Constitution of the United States. They lose their citizenship if this administration decides they're a terrorist.
You know, this person wanted to suddenly raise questions about whether or not they're terrorists, and they were to return to the United States, of course they would be entitled to due process. That's something we provide every U.S. citizen. And for that matter, frankly, any terrorist who's arrested, we provide due process to that individual as well. But if a terrorist is out there on the battlefield and a terrorist is threatening this country, that person is an enemy combatant. And when an enemy combatant holds a gun at your head, you fire back.
Who makes that decision?
Decision as to whether or not ultimately to do that?
President?
Yes. President of the United States obviously reviews these cases and reviews the legal justification. And in the end says go or no go.
So it's the requirement of the administration under the current legal understanding is that the president has to make that declaration.
That's correct.
Not you.
That's correct.
Only the president can decide.
Well, it's a recommendation we make. It's a recommendation the CIA director makes in my prior role. But in the end, when it comes to going after someone like that, the president of the United States has to sign off. And he should.
Well, Chuck, I've just got to say here, first of all, that the skunk in the middle of the garden party here is that Panetta is saying, Al-Awlaki could have just come back and asserted his due process rights. Against what? There were no charges ever leveled against him for him to come back and assert due process to defend himself from charges. He was adjudicated. That's the wrong word to use. He wasn't even adjudicated.
No, he wasn't.
He was just identified as a quote unquote enemy combatant, and an execution was taking place without any kind of. There was no ruling of treason. There was no charge brought against him in a court of law. There was nothing except the CIA and a small group of specially handpicked counselors to the president and the president himself signing off and saying, we think this guy's a bad guy.
Here's the problem, Barry. Everything around the Al-Awlaki situation was done in secret.
Yes,
it
was.
He actually had no idea. I'm sure he knew that he had tripped some kind of a mechanism someplace that he might be in trouble. But the fact is, everything was done in secret. The only reason we knew about most of this is because it got leaked.
Yes, that's right.
They did not want this out there because they did not want to have to deal with this citizenship issue. And the reason they didn't want to deal with the citizenship issue is because they have so twisted the logic of the Constitution to make it look like it's the President of the United States who makes a decision on this issue. Uh-uh, baby. The Constitution is extremely clear. The Congress makes the decision on all issuances of letters of mark and reprisal.
Yeah, that's Article 1, Section 8 of the United States Constitution, for those of you who've been listening to us for a while. Everything we're going to take is going to go back to that document and back to the Bible as well, because even, with biblical admonitions about the taking of a life, there was due process that was involved.
That's right.
That by the testimony of two or three witnesses actually is one of the foundational basis for our trials by jury in this country. And those are the things. But you know what, Chuck? I think the real reason they tried to keep it secret was they didn't have the NDAA passed yet.
Well, there's another issue here, too. You're right on that. But the fact is that the NDAA only does what Rick Santorum called, Rick, the great constitutional scholar, please give me a break, basically said, we're simply codifying existing Supreme Court decisions. Well, when the Supreme Court is wrong and you put the wrong decision into law, the law is wrong. And the fact is, the Supreme Court does not have the final say on what the Constitution says. The Constitution has the final say on what the Constitution says.
Oh, absolutely.
And we've talked about this as well. This is that ex parte Quirin case where a United States citizen was deemed to have given up his citizenship by joining the German army. Not so fast, folks. That's nowhere in the Constitution of the United States of America. Fact is that this Haupt, I think his name was due a trial in a court for treason, not to be tried by a military tribunal.
That's right.
So we've got major problems here. I'm really surprised, according to the old adage or the old saw we did as kids, liar, liar, pants on fire. I'm really surprised on the video of this thing, we can't see Leon Panetta dissolve into flames from his pants suddenly catching fire, because he said anyone, even foreign terrorists, get legal due process. Huh?
No.
I don't think so.
No. Well, no, you see, that was the talking point from the Democrats when George Bush was in office, that we need to give everybody in Guantanamo full constitutional rights to a trial by jury. However, now that they are in the seat of power, we're passing things like the Enemy Expatriation Act, which, honestly, Chuck, now you see the genius behind that, because yes, if you can take away somebody's citizenship for determining when this secret panel meets and they give these names and the president creates this, well, basically a hit list of American citizens who are targeted for assassination, wouldn't it be convenient if at the same time you can just say, well, we're taking stripping all of these people of their citizenship, so that way they can't run to the courts for due process if they would happen to find out. And remember, this is a secret list, so therefore, the only way we've ever found out about the about al-Awlaki being on the list and his targeting was because it got leaked.
It got leaked by somebody who didn't like what happened. Who didn't like what happened?
But even if somebody goes to the court, the administration is going to say, "Oh, nope, sorry, national security issue, state secrets. You don't have any access to it." So they could do it, but if they just say, well, no, I'm sorry, this person is no longer a citizen of the United States, and so therefore they're not entitled to the protection of the United States Constitution.
Right.
Therefore, we're pulling the trigger on them, and they have no recourse.
And that's one of the most frightening things there that basically Panetta said, and that is that the president has the final authority. And in fact, guys like McCain and Levin and supporters out there like Romney and Gingrich, and even Santorum, whose half-hearted criticisms of the Enemy Expatriation Act, which basically said, well, we should be able to give them a habeas corpus hearing and then detain them indefinitely without trial, which was exactly what his position was, which is at least as wrong. So what if you get a habeas corpus hearing when the court says no, you still get hauled off to Guantanamo Bay to be held without trial?
Yeah, exactly. You just have to be delayed in a holding cell for a little while before you get shipped out.
The United States Constitution and a biblical view of your rights as a citizen of this country, and you may think that I'm making too much of a case that it is biblical. It is. The fact is, you have the right to a trial with witnesses.
That's right.
And the fact is, they do not have the power, the authority, the right to detain you without trial.
Well, and the other thing we're forgetting here, even if we get to the trial phase, is the presumption of law.
That's
right. You are innocent until proven guilty. Now, isn't it convenient that you have an administration who can make a list, take away your citizenship rights, and then tell the courts, you can't see it because it's a state secret? Where's your due process? How have they proven you guilty? No, they've unilaterally decided that some act that you did or will do, because let's not kid ourselves, ladies and gentlemen, what we're getting into is the realm of thought crimes.
Exactly.
We are getting it. You know, they've passed hate crimes legislation in this country on various levels. What we're getting into is the realm of thought crimes. At what point, absent a declaration of war against an actual foreign country, are we getting into the situation where you have the philosophy of administration saying these folks, read the Tea Party, are dangerous to good order? They're not playing nicely with us. They're not following what the administration is telling them is right. Ladies and gentlemen, I mean, I'm not trying to be hyperbolic here, but let's face facts. When you live in a police state, the only people who get to make the rules are the police.
Barry, how many times in the mid-thousands did you and I go to meetings where we'd hear conservatives, quote-unquote conservatives, saying, we need to pass this law to give the president this kind of power?
Power. We still now, hear it. They want to give him a line item veto by a constitutional convention.
There you go.
Why we've decided to basically, you know what, honestly, it's been a theme in this country since right after the Revolutionary War of wanting a monarch. You can thank Alexander Hamilton for that.
That's right. But how many times did you and I say, okay, stop for a minute?
Oh, now, more times than I care to count.
Now put that power in the hands of a president of the opposite party from you. Do you want him, her, to have that power? Well, I don't think we have to worry about that. How many times?
We'll
repeal the law. But we'll repeal the law when we
can count on we can count on Congress to man up and come in there and restrict the power of the executive only when we have a confrontational Congress with the president. And honestly, ladies and gentlemen, I don't care if it's been R's in the Congress and D's in the White House, or R's in the White House and D's all in the Congress, or all D's or all R's. Our history for at least the last half century or more has been that Congress has basically said, oh, yeah, you go ahead and do whatever you want to. Well, we don't care.
Probably since about 1933 or so.
Or so, that's right, exactly.
We're coming up on, 80 years. So
coming close.
But no, how many times have we done that? Now, I was sort of taken aback by an attempt by Panetta to draw a word picture.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that these American citizen terrorists have a gun held to our head, a cocked gun held to our head, and he says, I feel fine in firing first. That's a paraphrase.
Yeah, it's a paraphrase, but that's what he said.
Let's get at what the real facts of the issue are. Let's say someone that's a citizen has taken up arms against the United States, and you send the military in to wage that kind of a war against that American citizen.
Yeah.
I got no problem with that at all. It's a military operation. The person is committing an act of war as long as it's been done correctly.
The due process works both ways.
That's right.
That's exactly right.
Now, the fact is, nobody is really sure that al-Awlaki was actually doing the things he's accused of, because all the paperwork is hidden.
That's right.
You can't find out anything. All we know that he did was basically utter nasty things about the United States of America and talk about how he, victory for Islam and all that stuff. The fact is, nobody knows for sure what he did, and we aren't going to know now because he's never going to get a trial.
Well, and that's the whole point, Chuck. I mean, basically what we've now created in this country is the Star Chamber.
Yes.
And for those of you who know a little bit about history, you understand the English Star Chamber issue was where the heads of government got in there and they decided whether or not somebody might break the law in the future, and so therefore they were going to punitively punish them prior to them actually engaging in treason.
Well, it's even more interesting than that, because what it was a special court.
Yes.
Built by the king and run by the king's chamberlain.
The chamberlain, yes.
Who basically would have people secretly arrested.
Yep.
And dragged into what they called the Star Chamber, which was actually, it was a room. And if I remember right, it got its name because the ceiling was painted, was either glass or had stars painted on it or something.
Had stars painted on it.
And they would be tried. They would be attainted.
Yes.
In the constitutional language, they would be attainted, which means they would be found guilty of a treasonous act by act of this special extrajudicial court. And that's exactly what's going on here. Basically, the Congress of the United States, both in a bipartisan effort with the support of people who are running for president of the United States, for crying out loud, and someone who spent time in a North Vietnamese prison camp, have built this Star Chamber wherein, as President Obama said in a recording that I have that I can't get again, I'm trying to get it into a format we can use, where basically he says, we killed al-Awlaki because he was on a list. Oh, really? So you get on a list, and that is due process, and you are now worthy of the death penalty. Okay, folks, we now live, fortunately, we're now Alice through the looking glass. We really live in a place where the entire world is upside down, because under no circumstances does that resemble anything that has anything to do with the United States Constitution or the rights and responsibilities that are listed in there.
Oh, but the point is, Chuck, that's the whole issue, is we don't need the Constitution. Matter of fact, we don't even need a law, because the panel that has been made of senior government officials who make this list up to give to the president so he can do the little check off to say, okay, this citizen doesn't deserve his citizenship. This one, this little piggy is going to get shot. This one's going to get hit by a drone. There is no law that establishes that the existence of that panel. There has never been a law passed. There is actually, and the no public records can be had of what that panel does or decides, or who even is on the panel. At the very least, with Star Chamber, you had a writ from the king, and you knew who was on the panel.
Sometimes they didn't actually know who was on the
panel. Well,
the Chamberlain put together the list.
But the point is, at least you knew somebody who was responsible for it. And you ultimately you did understand what was going on, and they understood that, because I think Parliament had to get involved at some point.
Well, the Parliament got involved by outlawing the Star Chamber.
Yeah. Hint, hint, hint to everybody who's running for Congress right now, and you can hear my voice. It's time you all started getting a little bit more intestinal fortitude and started going up against this. I don't care if you want this power for your next president, whether it be Mitt Romney or Newt Gingrich or Rick Santorum or even Ron Paul. I don't care. The point is, we have a constitution for a reason.
That's right.
We have protections against this type of thing because of the experience of our forefathers in England with Star Chamber, with a runaway monarch, with a monarch who didn't keep his covenants, with a man who believed that he was divine and had a divine right, and therefore he was above the law. Not that he was under the law as well. See, part of the reason why there was bloodshed and we did something that had not been done in history before was because of the idea that the rule of law is vital to liberty.
That's exactly right. The fact is, the Star Chamber was outlawed as part of the passage of what's known as the English Bill of Rights.
Yes.
After the Glorious Revolution of 1688. We won't go too deep into that history. You want to get that history? Come on out to Camp American.
Yeah, we'll give it to you.
www.campamerican.com this year, June 24th through 30th. You can hear all kinds of interesting things. That little historical tidbit, I'm sure, will come up. If it's not up in this year, it'll be up in another year, and we may have it in the archives. Because I know I've talked about the Glorious Revolution before. But the fact is, our Bill of Rights is based on the English Bill of Rights, and even the British, with their monarch, their hereditary monarch, understood that that monarch had to be constitutionally controlled because they'd spent about 300 years fighting over that question. And the fact is, we're about to go back to fighting that question.
Well, let's roll the clock forward 236 years, because here we are. We have an administration who believes he's above the law. He's created a Star Chamber. They are picking out citizens who they determine to be a threat to good order, carrying out assassinations. Now, they've done it on foreign soil, ladies and gentlemen, but don't you think that with some of the things that are being passed, with NDAA, the Enemy Expatriation Act, and the basically throwing off of the Posse Comitatus Act, that you won't soon find out that this could happen on our soil? Honestly, does a U.S. citizen give up his rights when he goes on foreign soil? Well, for any of you who've ever gone down to Mexico on mission trips or been up to Canada fishing or anything like that, boy, did you have to at the border have to like take the citizenship test again to get back in? No, you didn't, because you didn't give up your rights. And the point is that if you were prosecuted under a foreign country's law while you're in that country, you also had the right to go to the embassy or have the American consul stand up for the fact that you are an American citizen and under the American Constitution, and that your rights were sacrosanct against these foreign countries. Same thing we do with diplomats in this country. We give them diplomatic immunity. Same principle applies. But the point is, it's not going to apply much longer.
Mm-mm.
But
no.
But just to our citizens. Because if they can kill Anwar al-Awlaki with drone planes manufactured by the CIA, not the military, the CIA, mind you,
mm-hmm.
without any charges ever being brought, just because a secret panel in a Star Chamber put his name on a list, and the man who would be king signed off on it, well, look to your right, look to your left, look at yourself. You could be next. And you would the precedent that's being set right now, the precedent that is going forward from what people would consider good conservative Republicans, John McCain and Charlie Dent and others. They're passing laws that are taking away not only your freedoms, not only your citizenship, but given what we're seeing the trend going, could be taking away your life, and you have nothing you can do about it. But that's the reason why we have a Constitution. That's the reason why Congress, your congressman, and I don't care how good or bad your congressman is, honestly, if they won't stand up for this, they're worthless.
Yeah, they're
I don't care how great of a guy they are, how conservative they are on life issues, on gay rights. I don't care where they stand on all these issues. If they won't stand up on this one, they don't deserve to be in office, period.
If they don't understand the issue, then they are constitutionally illiterate, or as I've been gotten in trouble for saying, they're constitutional nincompoops.
Uh-huh.
And that means that they have no business sitting in the office. Now, some you might say, well, he's a constitutional attorney. That means nothing. It means absolutely nothing. No constitutional attorney I've ever run into has ever spent even 30 seconds reading the Constitution in a constitutional law class, or, in fact, any part of their law school training. I've run into attorneys, as we've explained in the past, who have never, ever actually read the Constitution. I had one guy ask me, we talked about our Institute on the Constitution class. Is it taught by attorneys? And I said, no. Well, you know, I'm an attorney. Why would I want to take that? And I said, because you want to actually learn what the Constitution says.
That's right.
Do you know where to find things like why the president can do certain things and why he can't do things? Do you understand where the limitations of the power of Congress are? To those questions, everybody answers no. Well, then you need to take our class, because I can tell you off the top of my head where most of that stuff is. I can't quote it to you, but I can tell you the general area where to look. And in a lot of cases, I can tell you the exact article and section. That comes from just years of study. And the fact is that anyone who listens to Leon Panetta knows there's something wrong, but doesn't know quite what it is.
Well, at least those folks have a pulse, Charles.
Exactly.
Because the rest of the entire citizenry of this country just did this. Exactly. I guess it doesn't affect me, so I'm not paying any attention to it. We've just had one of the most startling admissions from a public official in this country, not just in my lifetime or your lifetime, in the history of this country, that they now feel vindicated, justified, well within their bounds to identify, point out, process, sign off on, and kill any American citizen just because they say so. Ladies and gentlemen, people, I've heard this said. Everybody says, well, this is the most important election of our lifetime.
Yeah.
You know what? I don't think most of the people who said that know how true it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'll tell you what, if this country doesn't elect people, and I'm not talking about the president, because honestly, the president's the problem, and any of the guys that are coming later are going to be a similar problem,
yep.
But it's going to be, there are guys instead of their guys, and so therefore we'll look the other way even more. It's Congress. Ladies and gentlemen, it's not the courts, it's not the president. Congress is the key. If you have a congressman who's constitutionally literate, and who's willing to stand up, even against his own party, and let's not kid ourselves, both parties are perfectly okay with this.
Absolutely.
Both parties are perfectly okay, because it's basically, oh, when our guys control the levers, well, we don't want to get rid of these things because we may need to use them on something. It's a reason why Guantanamo didn't get shut down when Barack Obama became president, because it's still useful to them.
Well, remember the six-month pledge?
Yes, the six-month pledge. But the point is, I don't care which Republican comes in there, they're not going to change anything. And if these are in place, they're going to look at it just as the courts look at case law. Stare decisis. We're going to let the decision stand. In other words, hey, we might be able to find a useful way of putting that into play. So we're going to keep it, because, hey, that's how they got power. That's how we can keep power.
And this turns into a back and forth, a power exercise. Basically, what you're doing is you're replacing one party who wants power this way with another party who wants power the other way.
But the point is they still want the same power. They just want to direct it in different fashions.
That's exactly right. We are now arguing over who's going to get welfare. Is it going to be people in, you know, the populace? Are they going to get the handouts, or are businesses going to get the handouts?
Right. And health care.
And exactly.
And the list goes, and the beat goes on and on and on. Point is, we don't need a different drum major. We need a different sheet of music.
Yeah, exactly.
And we need to have a sheet of music called the United States Constitution. Article 1 is very clear. All legislative authority herein granted is vested in a Congress of the United States. It's not vested in a star chamber. It's not vested in 9 people sitting in black robes. It's not vested in the man who would be king.
Well, let's take a look at that for a second, Barry. Only the judiciary branch has the power to try individuals.
That's right.
And in fact, what's going on here? The president is acting as judge, jury, executioner. Okay, let's say Congress can issue a letter, what we've explained in the past, a letter of mark and reprisal. Well, what that is really is more of an attempt to gain justice for people we can't get into a courtroom. It is a last-ditch effort. It's not a first resort.
No.
And in fact, what's going on? In fact, these star chambers are probably, everybody's speculating what they're made up of. It's the National Security Agency and the Central Intelligence Agency. That is who's making up these lists.
We could only hope. I'm hoping it's not a bunch of his czars from various agencies coming in there and saying, because what happens, Chuck? And honestly, this is something we haven't really even touched on, and I know we don't have a lot of time left to touch on it. Well, we got a little bit of time to touch on it, but the point is that, folks, first it's terrorism, then it's your political opponents.
Yeah, exactly. That's what's coming next.
Then it's citizens who are trying to stand up for their rights. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a slippery slope. Point is, the only one who can get us off the slope is you. That's right. You, Chuck, and me. Because instead of voting for the same old, we need to go and we need to be replacing congressmen who won't stand up. Charlie Dent needs to go in Pennsylvania.
That's right.
Here in Ohio, we got congressmen who voted for NDAA.
Pat Tiberi, my congressman,
needs to go. I'm sorry. And you know what? They can come blasting us from the Federal Elections Commission that we're endorsing candidates. But you know what? We're C4. We can do it. So, to you.
Give them the raspberry.
Give them the raspberry. That's right. But the point is, they need to go, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
And they need not be replaced with the other good old boy from the other party, or the other good old boy in the party structure, because, you know, like we saw with one of the districts here, that they got tired of the one guy, and so they drew him into a district with another one of his colleagues so he'd get out of the race. The point is, we need to get rid of those folks who won't stand on the Constitution, congressmen who don't understand that Article 1 gives them authorities and limitations, but that what it does overall is gives them the sole right to pass laws in this country. And if anybody else usurps that, whether it be the Star Chamber, the president, or 9 people in black robes, their duty is to impeach. And that's your right. There is one other place. One person can be tried somewhere else other than one of the courts, and that's the president being tried in the Senate after being impeached.
That's right, by the House.
By the House.
And in fact, that's the only place where a trial can be held, is the House can impeach and the Senate can try.
And guess who sets in the as the head of the trial? It's the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court.
That's right. You know, Barry, that kind of brings up an idea. You know, one of the reasons we have this problem is the current way the parties are structured. Now, we know you and I are probably more familiar with the Republican infighting. I got a thing today that, for instance, Kevin DeWine is...
And for those of you who don't know, he's the chairman of the Ohio Republican Party.
Chairman of the Ohio Republican Party is making a concerted effort to make certain that conservatives, mostly Christian conservatives and constitutional thinkers, are not allowed onto Republican state central committee.
Well, they're not. He's not being that brash about it. They're changing the permanent rules of the state central committee to require that a person who would serve on it would had to have voted in the Republican primary for the last three statewide cycles. So in other words, a lot of folks who are now getting up in the Tea Party movement who may have been independents or who maybe were Republicans who didn't vote before, but they're getting involved. Well, you know, that's trouble.
That's trouble.
So we need to change that.
It's definitely trouble. But what it's trouble for is for the entrenched party interests.
Yes, it is.
And that is the old money country club Republican liberals who are really feeling the pinch. And Kevin DeWine is one of those. There is just simply no doubt about that. All you had to do, in fact, if the folks want me to, I can dig up the audio, which I have on my iPod, of Kevin DeWine's 2008 press conference, where he taught, where he throws conservatives under the bus and says that, or this is would have been 2006, he throws conservatives under the bus because Ken Blackwell lost
the gubernatorial race.
Election, when in fact it was the Kevin DeWine types who lost the election by refusing to vote for Ken Blackwell or openly supporting and voting for Ted Strickland.
Well, I'll do you one better, Chuck. We don't have to go to your iPod. They can just go to principledpolicy.com because we have that in our archives.
That's right.
We actually have a video of that, I believe.
Yes, we do.
Video of the press conference. And you can go to our archives and Google, you know, just type in the search engine and it'll pull up that thing and you can listen to it for yourself word for word.
Yeah, that's right.
Basically, the party's done with the issues like abortion. And gay rights. And honestly, we just, you know, basically have to, we have to get on to more serious things like the economy. Well, you know, how are they doing, folks?
Well, I'm going to be quite honest. Now, we're kind of segueing into another thing, but it's all related. What I'm saying is that we can't keep being given nothing but the lesser of two evils. There is no such thing, I agree, as the perfect candidate for any job. But the fact is that Christians are constantly being asked to the prom. We put on our pretty dress. We put on all our makeup. We get taken to the prom where we're immediately dragged behind the bleachers, ravaged. And then our date basically leaves with the liberal girl from the other party and goes off and has fun with her at the dance. Meanwhile, we lay under the bleachers and cry and say, gosh, what a horrible experience. I'm never going to let that happen again. And 1, 2, or 4 years later, here we are again.
Back at the party.
Back at the dress store looking for our big dress for the big night. And, you know, how are we going to dress up and get the guy, you know, please our man. And our man is the party. The fact is, it's time to tell our man, sorry, you're obviously more interested in the other side. The only way you can do that is to just make it clear. You give me another one of these candidates. Well, honestly, Barry, we did that in 2008, and they didn't learn a lesson.
I'm glad you brought that up because I think some of our listeners might remember this. It was called Operation Chaos. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Where the conservatives decided that Hillary Clinton was such an untenable potential opponent for the Republicans that a lot of Republicans in the primary elections, which we're now in again 4 years later, would go and switch their party affiliation and vote Democrat. And who were they voting for?
Barack Obama.
Chickens coming home to roost? I think so. Honestly, who knows what a Hillary Clinton presidency would look like if there would have even been one. But we now all know what a Barack Obama presidency looks like. And I think partly we've got a lot of Republicans who vote out of fear and who wanted the lesser of two evils even in the other party to get us to where we are today.
Well, you and I have talked about this on many times, and I don't know if we've talked about it on the air or not, but how many times did our friends come to us in 2007 and 2008 with the Anybody But Hillary Club?
Almost as many times as the other thing we were talking about.
And the fact is, I've asked, okay, you guys said Anybody But Hillary in 2007. You got Anybody But Hillary. How do you like it? Because I'll be quite honest, Hillary could not have gotten away with half the stuff that the current occupant of the White House has.
No, I doubt very seriously that would have been the case. However, we are where we are by the providence of God, but I'm hoping that people are using this as a wake-up moment to understand that voting the lesser of two evils, or voting out of fear, or voting just hooray for our side,
exactly,
doesn't work. And what it can lead to, the consequences can be life-threatening.
And that's folks, the bottom line.
Why are we here in 2012 talking about a star chamber? Talking about the assassination of American citizens without due process? Talking about killing someone who the president and a private group determined to be a terrorist without defining the act or actually bringing any charges? Why are we talking about the other candidate who everybody flocked to being the man who brings the amendment to take away the Posse Comitatus Act, to suspend habeas corpus, and so that American citizens can be taken out of their homes, detained without charges, without process, without access to counsel, and without even being told what they're being taken for indefinitely? Chickens coming home to roost. Folks, we got to clean out the hen house. That's just all there is to it.
Yeah, the weasel's in the hen house.
Weasels are in the hen house. It's time to clean it out. Now, honestly, ladies and gentlemen, if you think, well, this is too big for me, you're probably right. And it's probably going to overwhelm you and swamp you because you do nothing. But if you get educated, you listen, you search this thing stuff out yourself, you look at the Constitution, you go at your current elected office holders and you find out where they really stand. Because you know what? You can ask them once and they'll give you a great form letter back. It'll be beautiful. It'll be flowing. It'll talk about all these wonderful things and flowers and candy and puppy dogs. You keep pressing them on the issue until they finally tell you exactly where they're really at.
And they will eventually.
And they will. And the point is, that's at that point, then you need to take that and go to your friends and your neighbors and say, look, this person is constitutionally illiterate, and they're okay with us losing our freedom. And don't just think, well, if we just get rid of the guy sitting in the president's office, everything's going to be okay.
Well, look, another thing we got to remind people, don't get suckered by these arguments that if we don't do this, then the terrorists win. No, they don't. We have so many other ways of combating terrorism in this country, and one of them is getting control of our borders. I'm not talking about rounding up Mexicans who are here, maybe snuck in with a family member and are working in your house or in your garden. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about people who have taken advantage of our lax border security and snuck into the country, or have come in as students but never attended a class, or came in as students and took classes long enough to learn how to fly a plane, but not long enough how to take off or land. That should have been a red flag.
Yes.
There are any number of things that should have been a red flag. Why we aren't stopping people who are fully well known to have ties to people who don't like the United States of America, why are we not stopping them from coming in? And the fact is, because we want them here, but the government wants them here. They're using them. I hate to sound paranoid, and I hate to sound conspiracy theorist, but the fact is they're easy to use as an excuse to remove your freedom. And the fact is you don't need to lose your freedom. They need to be kicked out of this country. And we don't need to play the race card or any of that nonsense, because it has nothing to do with anything. As we've seen, there are plenty of people who are American-born, white, black, Asian, who have converted to these radical sects, and it has nothing to do with race.
No.
It has everything to do with worldview.
And that's what we're going to keep driving back to. Worldview matters. Ideas have consequences, and
that's
bad
right.
Ideas have bad consequences.
That's right.
So let's start having some better ideas. Let's get some better candidates, and let's start thinking from a biblical worldview and a constitutional perspective so that we can have liberty under law the way we were intended to.
All right. To wrap up today, I'm going to tell you we are putting together a class for probably the Northern Columbus, Westerville, maybe Worthington, somewhere in that vicinity. We're putting together a constitutional class, our Institute on the Constitution. If you are interested in taking part in that, please contact us at www.principledpolicy.com. We will get and ask you a number of questions, like where you're comfortable with and those kinds of things, because we're looking for a venue and we are looking for a number of students. I need about a dozen students and we will start another class. And if you want to understand your Constitution, how it works, and what to do about these things, then you need to take Institute on the Constitution. The cost is minimal. It really amounts to about $5 a night, class for 12 weeks. And really, that's not very expensive, and you get a whole bunch of books to start your Liberty Library with. So, again, contact us if you're interested in taking a Constitution class, our Institute on the Constitution class, www.principledpolicy.com. And be with us on Monday for another Principles and Policies.